Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the July 6th edition of the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. Hopefully everyone had a great 4th of July. Hopefully you guys were able to enjoy barbecues, bonfires, fireworks, everything that goes along with it, and everything like that. And hopefully you guys were able to watch a couple of these games this past weekend. That's pretty awesome. Welcomed, as always, by Tom Bovey, who is going to be joining me, and we are going to be welcomed by Davey Emola here in about 10 minutes. But Tom, first off, happy 4th of July, a little late, but you were out actually in the West Coast this past weekend, and you actually got a chance to see the game that we're going to be talking to Davey about, and I know we talk about some of these big-time games all the time, and I know that you and I have had the opportunity to see MLL championship games, all-star games, things like that. What was your take just from the fan experience of going to see the 4th of July game out in Colorado?
This was my first time at that particular game. I've been to a couple games in Denver before, but never the 4th of July game, and it was ridiculous. There's no other way to put it. I think the fans were more than a touch disappointed. The air kind of got sucked out of the stadium as the cannons destroyed them. But I mean, if you were looking for a lacrosse show, if you were looking for to watch a lacrosse movie play out, this was it. It was a one-sided battle. It was like your typical action movie, but it was terrific. It was fantastic. It was fun to watch. It had everything, and the cannons were able to execute on an absolute another level. It was ridiculous watching them do what they were able to do. I can't use enough adjectives to describe the way they played and how good that they looked. And on the flip side, Denver, the frustration built and forced more and more and more turnovers. They couldn't dig themselves out of the hole fast enough, and so they just kept digging to dig out, and they just buried themselves. It was an absolutely horrible game. If you're a fan of Jesse Schwartzman, it was not a game you want to watch. They had no answers on the defensive end. They had no answers on the offensive end. It was a good old-fashioned beatdown.
Now, before we get into the Denver Outlaws, before we get into the games of the week, I do want to go back to the experience, because you're one of the very few guys I know who get to experience the plethora of all these games. And I want to ask you real quick, how you would rate this game? Because I know this is the one that was 22-9 cannon, so obviously the air got sucked out, as you said, real quick. But basically, you've been able to go to an all-star game, you have been to a championship game, you have been to the 4th of July game in Denver, and you've seen a lot of rivalry matchups. If you were to say rivalry X versus this game versus a championship versus all-star, how would you rank them 1 to 4? I'm saying as a 16-15 game in each one of them, which one to you was the best fan experience?
All-star game is always the best. It's the game I tried. I did not get to go this year, but I've been to 5 of the last 7. It's the game that you can't miss on the calendar unless there's an absolutely good reason. For a fan experience, it's unmatched. Now, you're not necessarily seeing the greatest team lacrosse. You're seeing some of the greatest individual lacrosse in the world. You're not seeing strategy. You're not seeing anything but up and down, pass it around, shoot for fun, go behind the back, between the legs, through the wickets, whatever, however you want to say it. It's all for fun. And that's the experience you're going to get. You're going to get players that are loose. They're going to get players that are there to have a good time and players that are very excited to be there. All-star game is number 1 to me. A championship is number 2 because it really is the pinnacle. You are seeing the 2 best lacrosse teams ever on the field that year. Now, you get your World Games teams in there and all that jazz and stuff, and you could say that those are better teams. I'm going to dispute that a little bit and say because of the MLL style of play with the two-point shot, with the shot clock, you get to see a better game at an MLL championship than you will see at any other venue in sports. And now with the new format of the home game, the bye week, we're not seeing the two games in 2 days, you're getting to see a really, really good brand of lacrosse at the championship. But this game was amazing. There's no way, there's no other way to describe it. I was on the field, about the 40-yard line across from the Cannons bench, and Denver, it's a venue. I mean, you go to Mile High Stadium. I mean, I'm a football fan. You're a football fan. People love football. You're in Mile High Stadium, and you're there in front of 31,664 fans, and it's incredible. The atmosphere is nuts. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's everything you want it to be. I'm not going to say it's the best stadium experience in the MLL. I have not been to all of them. I've come close, but I have not quite hit every single stadium to be able to say that. But it's going to rival every one as far as the atmosphere. I did not go to a Cannons game in Gillette, so I can't comment on that. But the Denver atmosphere, the Denver fans, they love lacrosse. Even the people that were there to see the fireworks, don't kid yourself, some of these people were. They don't all go to watch the game. I think the game is at some point to throw in for some people, but they got into it. They enjoyed it. Again, they want the Denver team to win because that's the way it should be. And if you're in Denver's shoes, why would you – I don't know how the MLL schedule is generated. I doubt it's like a college schedule where they kind of pick who they're going to play. But you look at this game and – you don't want Boston coming in on the 4th of July. I think the announcers said it. Boston is 4-0 now, or 4-1. But they've won the last four 4th of July games they've played out in Denver. That's the matchup. If you're Boston, you look at that and think, yep, 30,000 fans, we got this, no problem. It's just something that's crazy because most MLL games you get 10,000. Boston plays in front of about 10,000 a week. Some other teams play in front of a little bit less than that. But this is 30,000, and it changes everything. The atmosphere, the stadium noise, the anticipation level, it changes everything from a player's perspective on the field. When you look up into the crowd and you see an NFL stadium that's maybe half full, it's everything. That is exactly what these players want week in and week out, to have that. I mean, if we could draw 30,000 fans a game for every MLL game, you'd see this become a full-time job for every single player, for everyone. It would just become what baseball is, or what baseball used to be or could be. It's just an incredible atmosphere, an incredible thing. It's unfortunate for the fans' perspective that Denver is unable to win this game. But at the same time, the Cannons put on a show, and those fans got to see it. 30,000 people now believe the Cannons are championship contenders, and rightfully so.
Yeah, it was kind of a ridiculous game as far as the scoreline was concerned. But, Tom, people, before we welcome Davey Emel on here in about 2 or 3 more minutes, I do want to get your opinion on one quick thing, because people who follow you on Twitter, and by the way, that is @BovLax for anyone who needs to follow Tom, is a great follow. You mentioned the fact that this is a year where a lot of the postseason awards don't seem to be decided in any way. I know the past couple of years it was pretty evident to figure out kind of who the top two guys, if that, were the people who were going to be in the lead. And this year kind of seems to be a little bit more stacked as far as every race is concerned. Without getting to any of them individually, just because we do need to welcome Davey on here in a couple minutes, is this one of the more closely contested years for a lot of these postseason accolades that players get in your recent memory? Because it seems like right now, A, the league is exceptionally deep, but B, it seems like that you see a lot of the rookies coming in and making immediate impacts. And to begin with, it's just tough figuring out who's the best of the best. Does that seem that way to you?
Well, I sent out the tweet saying, you know, the race for Offensive Player of the Year, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player, and Offensive Rookie of the Year are pretty much wide open. And the guys, the pro players that follow me, the guys I talk to, and a lot of the ones I know, shot a lot of texts my way with their comments as to who's going to win each of those awards. And the funny thing was is there were a lot of different comments. So that tells me that it's really wide open. Of course, guys are going to skew their votes towards their teammates. But at the same time, Yeah, I think all these races are more wide open than usual. I don't know if it's because we've seen more injuries or maybe more players miss a few games or more of a wide open race. I mean, we still have six teams that are serious playoff contenders at this point in the season. So we're really seeing balance. You know, Rabel misses two games for New York, and they come back into the fold, and he's talked about as the MVP because it shows how much they need him. But I think just about every team that's a playoff contender has somebody you could call their MVP, and the choices are pretty clear.
Yeah, you do mention the fact there are six teams who are vying in for playoff spots at this point in time. And right now I do want to bring in one of the guys who's kind of spearheading the campaign for one of these teams, making a serious push to be not only a playoff contender, but to be a championship contender. Do want to welcome in Davey Emela to the show. And Davey, first off, happy late 4th of July. Congratulations on the success this past weekend. How are you doing tonight?
Appreciate it. Appreciate you guys having me on the show tonight. You know, the 4th of July game was such a blast to play in. And as you can see, I think as a team, we had a great time. So we're excited about that. But as you guys were just talking about, obviously looking to keep that momentum going into this home run stretch here.
Yeah, the first thing I want to ask you is, Tom and I were talking about the fact, Tom was actually at the game. I don't know if you guys got a chance to kind of meet up. Hopefully you guys did. But how is the 4th of July game a little bit different from any other game you've experienced? I know it's kind of it's an NFL stadium, so it's a little bit daunting as far as playing in an arena that big, but there's a bigger crowd. How was it facing off against the Outlaws as far as the 4th of July game was concerned for you this year?
Right. Well, actually, as you know, we play in Gillette Stadium, which I think has helped us, you know, being on that big stage. And I know a lot of guys, you know, throughout their college careers had certain showcase games or whatever it may be at NFL stadiums too. So I think that was less of a factor, more so just, as you mentioned, the people, the amount of people that were there and really how engaged they were in the game. I know Denver is an outstanding place to be, but it's also, you know, really, really into its lacrosse. And I think you can just sort of tell that, you know, obviously there were numbers there, but the fans that were there were very interested in what was going on, very dialed in and locked into the game. So I thought that was extremely cool. The environment overall, you know, walking out and having almost that entire lower bowl and then some filled in that stadium. It's just it's such a cool experience, and I think any athlete will tell you, just, you know, having that kind of environment, you know, there's something extra that's going to get you going, just because you know it's a big game, and as in, due to looking at the standings, it was a big game. So that, along with the 4th of July festivities, how engaged the crowd was, that made it just a really special and cool place to play.
Now, Davey, so far this year, you have been on fire as far as just being able to make a huge impact for a team that not a whole lot of people thought were going to be second place in the standings as far as 11 games in the season. With this game specifically in mind, what were you able to exploit as far as the defense that Denver was able to kind of throw at you that enabled you to score six goals and be the leading contender for Offensive Player of the Week if you haven't already gotten that award?
Well, I think what you're saying, you're right. I think it starts with the mindset of the team as a whole. I think, you know, and our offensive guys, or actually everyone on the team, they really are not concerned about as much with who scores as well as just putting good offensive possessions together, you know, just making the few extra passes that gets you, you know, that slam dunk or that, you know, 5-yard shot on the crease as opposed to a 12-yarder down the alley or something like that. I think just buying into that mindset, even back at the beginning of the season, has been the difference for us. Obviously, it takes time for things to develop, and each week is different. You know, it's weird not being with your whole team throughout the week and not being able to practice, so you really got to buckle down, you know, the Friday nights when you practice and really try to get on the same page. And I think everyone as a whole has really bought into that. And so with that in mind, Denver – They're sending an extra pole up to our midfielders, which is, you know, a good move. They're dangerous. All those guys that are huge threats to score which means that two of our attackmen, even at some point, both myself and even Will Stanwyck, we get a short stick. And I think, you know, what we did really well, which I was really excited about, was no one panicked. No one sort of like, oh, you know, how do we do that? We ran our offense, you know, saw what was there, two passes, and then really looked to go on those short sticks. I think two of my goals came off of that, just, you know. But I think that, again, the important part was it wasn't just, all right, let me isolate, you know, and draw the short stick out. It was continue to run the offense, get the ball to the short, you know, the guy with the good matchup, and then we'll go from there. So it's a lot of team as well as just, you know, executing our game plan. And again, just having that camaraderie and the way we all think about offense has just really made that easier and able to happen.
And, Davey, last question for me, and I'll toss you over to Tom. I know you weren't a part of this team last year, but Boston and Ohio have had a ton of really knockdown, drag-out battles. And you guys are really close to the top of the standings. You guys are battling for a two seed, and you play each other twice in the next 3 weeks. Has there been any conversation between you and a bunch of the other guys who have been a part of a couple of these matchups in the past as far as what to expect from this? And are you guys kind of drawing up the game plan already, or kind of when does that process start for you?
Absolutely. That has already started. There's no doubt that this has been – and again, as you know, you don't want to, you know, overlook any week. Obviously, every game in the MLO is so important. You can't let down for any time. But I think in the back of everyone's heads, they're very, very aware of the fact that not only do we play this team twice in 3 weeks, but they're a very, very good team. It was sort of I was laughing a little bit because Marcus Holman and myself were roommates, which is pretty funny, especially this week. But just it's sort of, we kept saying all signs and all roads sort of leading to this matchup, and just that we know how important it's going to be. And you're right, I have not been a part of one, but I do not anticipate this being any different than the tough battles that they've had in the past. Ohio has an outstanding team, outstanding offense, and we're really going to have to, you know, play very, very well and bring our A game, because I think it's going to be a really good fight between two solid teams.
Hey, David, it's Tom. I'm going to jump right into include on what you just said.
Sure.
You're living with Marcus now. Is there a side bet? Is it already in place? Have you guys got it figured out?
We haven't actually, I guess, put anything into writing yet. But there's definitely the chatter and chirping has started. I started actually on my way back from Denver this past weekend. A few texts were sent back and forth, and it's good fun. But also, we're two competitive guys, and you know, we're just sort of, I guess, in our minds, it's all right, you know, it's go time. So we're going to both try to do what we can for our teams and try to get a win this weekend.
You scored 5 goals in a quarter and like a quarter of a second. Is it so like 15 minutes and 1/4 second? Were you just feeling it, or was it the right play at the right time?
Well, no, I think a lot of things were going on. Like I said, we try to come into every game, getting guys their touches, and then seeing, I guess, who's hot and then what's working. And like as you said, really in the start of that third quarter, I think it has definitely something to do with feeling it, but also just the mindset of, you know, not being passive, understanding that each possession, because as we know, each game is so important, each half, each quarter, and really it comes down to each possession at this point in the season is so, so important. So really I was just trying to go, you know, one possession at a time and you know, make the right play, make the smart play, and just what it was sort of their matchups and how they wanted to play defense sort of dictated, I guess, what we were going to do. And, you know, with that crowd out there and just with the whole atmosphere of the game, it was just, you know, there's a lot of motivation to sort of make it happen. So I absolutely wanted to make sure that I took advantage of any opportunities that I was going to get, and I did. And again, that's not in any way just me. That is so team-oriented. Just, you know, the one more pass, guys moving off ball, everyone trying to make room and create for each other. That's when, you know, really good offense, I think, you know, happens, and that's what happened Saturday night.
And the first goal, your first goal of the game, end of the second quarter, Adams
right.
gets, well, you're bringing the ball up about 8 seconds
one,
left.
Yeah,
yeah, Adams gets a hold of the ball and launches it forward. And, I mean, I was there. I assumed he was taking a very poor shot from about 40 yards out because time was running out. And you step in front of it, catch it, and redirect it in. You know, what's going through your mind at that time just to – you know, did you
right.
think he was shooting, or did you know it was coming to you?
I knew he was throwing it to me, absolutely. I guess it was the ball was sort of in our defensive end. You know, time winding down, and I mean, that's just sort of a time, obviously, with so few seconds left. Some guys are sort of thinking, all right, you know, the quarter's over, the half's over, or whatever. But sort of when I saw it get kicked out to Brent. He's such a dynamic player, and he always just when the ball's in his stick, it's just good things happen. He's such a heady and smart player, as well as extremely fast and skilled. So I didn't want to give up on the play. Sort of saw him take a look at the clock. Took a look at the clock and sort of made my move to try and backdoor my defenseman. As soon as I took my first step to that, he wound up the throw. So I knew it was coming to me. I was just hoping that it was going to be low enough. That I can handle it, and Brent threw an outstanding pass. And, I mean, the rest was easy for there, just catch it and put it in.
And in that situation, was there a clock you could see? There was a very large clock behind you.
Right.
Was there one you could see that, you know, so you knew you had time to catch and shoot?
I was hoping I did. Like I said, right when Brent sort of caught the ball, I remember vividly in my head the clock went from 5 to 4. So I thought I would at least have a few seconds, and, you know, the ball travels fast. Things can happen fast. I was like, if I can get it sort of in and out of my stick fast enough, then we should be all right. And I actually saw the replay yesterday, and it seemed like there was plenty of time left. So, like, I was just trying to, you know, make something happen, take advantage of an opportunity, and I think that was huge going into halftime for us, just because this league, as you guys know, is just such a momentum thing. And, again, I'm just really excited that Brent and I were on the same page like that. He made an outstanding play.
The first time we had you on the show was before your first supplemental draft, when you were trying to break into the league. We had you on again earlier this season. Now we're
right.
having you on at a point where your team's sitting in second place. You're contending for the most improved player in the league. How has the entire journey been? And I mean, is it one of those rides you just don't want to end?
Yeah. Well, I think just lacrosse in general and competing and playing sports is something I am determined that I don't want to end. As you know, high school, college, and then if you have, you know, lucky enough to have an opportunity to continue playing, that sort of, it's just sort of what's in my blood and really what I want to be doing. You know, my job is all lacrosse related down here in Raleigh. It's, you know, have a stick in my hand every day, and really just you know, I love lacrosse. I love competing. I love sports, and I also wanted to make sure that you know, I continue to give all the effort that was necessary, you know, to get me to this point. I never want to be, you know, a guy that sort of, I guess, you know, makes an excuse, because I guess could have easily happened, whereas, you know, this league's tough to break into. There's so many sort of variables and things that have to happen to you know, get an opportunity, or, you know, stay with an opportunity with the college kids that come in and the trades and everything that happens in this league. But really, I guess when you look at it that way, when there's so many things that out of your control, that can be a little intimidating. And I think, honestly, that might be the biggest difference between myself personally from, you know, last year to this year, was just I was so concerned about, you know, so many things that I couldn't control, and worrying about, you know, the numbers game and you know, the dress roster and all that stuff, when really all you can do is control what you can control, you know, how hard you play, your attitude about things, and how hard you work, you know, throughout the week. So I think that mindset, just sort of taking one week at a time, you know, started back in training camp for me, you know, just from that first weekend, you know, try to do a few good things, second weekend, one week at a time. And, you know, there's definitely, it hasn't all been, you know, fun and games. There's definitely been some tough times and difficult situations. But I'm really excited about the fact of how, obviously, of how it's played out, but also just that, you know, you kept, stayed the course and continued to, you know, believe and be confident. And I think really, again, so my mindset, you know, has been different. My mental state has been much better this season, and I think that's allowed me to improve physically as a player this year and just continue to each game, because that's really all you can do is to try to, you know, take advantage of the week, work hard, try to be better as a player, and get a W each weekend.
When you're on the offensive end and you see Ratliff break out of the pack on a fast break, I mean, you guys have lived and died in transition all year long. That's been
right.
That's been your biggest asset. Do you just think I'm going to give him his space, or do you, you know, what determines whether or not you're sliding after your man slides or going towards the cage or just kind of letting him do his thing?
Right. Well, I mean, again, I think that comes with now it seems like back, I don't even remember, training camp was in March. So being together every weekend has helped that. I've played the point for us for this time. So that way I've, you know, when he's coming down, we sort of develop our own relationship, and I feel like that happens with each player. And I mean, first off, Scott, he's so dynamic. I mean, you guys saw that goal he had, you know, just actually dodging with a pole and just the shots he does. And not only that, just the assists. I mean, he's such a dynamic player. And then when you have to worry about him, and so you have guys coming behind him like, you know, Hawkins and Brent Adams and Seaball's coming down on transition a lot, it can be a lot. It can be tough for an opposing team to handle, I think. But specifically with Scott, Each situation is different. I think you got to read, you know, who on their defense, what their defense is trying to do. Maybe, you know, if one of their midfielders has gotten off, something like that, and then just react to the situation accordingly. And a lot of times, especially lately, Scott, he's had sort of not only himself coming down, and you know, in a four-on-three fast break, but other D-middies of ours trailing. So that sort of creates a new situation where he might throw back and then hit the point, or he'll just skip it, and then you can throw back to that following D-mid. So honestly, it's just been a blast, to be honest, because I love transition. I think, you know, making those quick decisions, they really set people with high skill sets apart from others. And as you said, we really rely on our transition game. It's largely because of Scott Ratliff. He's just an outstanding player to play with each week.
And last one for me, and I'll let James finish up. What is it like from a player's perspective? I was at the game. I was, you know, 100 feet away from you at times, to silence a crowd of 31,000 people.
I'll tell you, it really brings you together as a squad, as a team. You know, it's so cool to have that many people there. Obviously, they weren't cheering for us. But that sort of creates the, you know, us against the world mentality. And I think we've honestly had that all year. Like you guys said, not many people expected us to do many things. And we have some unique guys and unique personalities that sort of really don't want to take no for an answer, and that have that chip on their shoulder. And I think that can be a really dangerous combination. So just to be out with that group of guys and sort of realize that how much everyone sort of bought into what we're doing, it strengthens the bond between the team. But it also, you know, it's just, I guess, sort of validates what you're doing and all the hard work you're putting in. So it was a special night, special time for all of us, but we're going to continue to keep fighting and get ready for this next weekend.
Well, Davey, we appreciate you taking the time out on a Monday afternoon, Monday evening.
Absolutely.
Come on. And hopefully you and Marcus don't get into too big of a shouting match about this game, because you guys are two of our
right
favorite
on.
People.
It's
y'all
Monday
good.
Now, so maybe as it gets better in a week, things may happen. But
that's exactly right. Just split the house in half. Like, what are you guys like?
Exactly.
Don't let the person
we won't talk on
something.
Thursday.
Yeah, Well, either way, man, best of luck to you both. Continued success for both you guys. You guys are both really the two of the better people that we ever get to talk to. We talk to a lot of good people. So we hold you guys in high regard, as I think everyone else should. But like I said, man, congratulations on this past weekend, and hopefully you guys continue success along the path. And we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you guys having me, and I'd come on anytime.
Absolutely. That's Davey Amela of the Boston Cannons, and it distracts me, as Tom distracts me, as really funny now, the fact that him and Marcus live together, because obviously, like, we talk to those guys probably more than any, I guess any other roommate combination that we deal with throughout the course of the league. And it's just kind of funny that they're going to play each other a couple times in really big games, and that kind of leads me into my next thing. Is there a bigger three-game stretch for two teams than Ohio and Boston, because they play against each other? It's kind of amazing how that kind of leads into the last little bit of the season. There are three games left for all these teams, and I don't know if there's a bigger chance for two teams to make a real impact than to sweep a season series between each other than the Ohio-Boston matchup. What's your take on kind of how that's going moving forward?
Well, that it's going to decide the second home game in the playoffs. That's a huge factor right now. One of these two teams is going to get a home game. The other one is not. So they're going to determine each other's fate. And there's a decent chance they play each other twice during the regular season here, the last 3 weeks, and then they play each other again the first week of the playoffs. Now, that changes if Boston wins both of the regular season matchups and Ohio falls to the 4 seed. But right now, if the playoffs started tomorrow, Ohio and Boston would play each other in the playoffs, and there's a decent chance that that's going to happen again. So it's an interesting dynamic. It makes it fun. That is the storyline for the rest of the season, is how do these two teams fare against each other? I mean, they're both, at this current time, known a little more for their offense, but their defenses have both been incredible, especially in the latter half of the season. Boston coming off of a blowout win that was a statement game for them, and Ohio coming off of a very disappointing loss where they gave up a big lead at halftime and kind of got dominated in the second half of that game. So Boston showing that when they get it together, they're dominant, and Ohio showing that they still have some things to work on. So it's an interesting matchup. It's an intriguing matchup. The teams match up very well. They both play a lot of transition ball. Phipps is probably the goaltender of the year. A matchup that I'm interested in seeing, and it relates to Davey Amela, because I was talking about him with Tim and Joe before we came on the show, was that he's probably at some point going to get matched up against Jackson Place. And in my mind right now, for my money, those two are probably battling for the Most Improved Player of the Year award. So how that shakes out is going to be very interesting, because Amela played one game for Charlotte last year. He now leads Boston in goals. He's been terrific all season. He's been their go-to guy in clutch situations, and he is their finisher. And Jackson Place, after Dana Wilbur's injury, has been forced to be Ohio's number one defender. And I haven't gotten the stats from Joe, the stat guru, who has done amazing things this season. I haven't gotten the numbers from him yet, but before this past weekend, Ohio was the number one defense in the league. So you got the number one defender from the number one defense against the league's hottest team right now, their leading scorer. So it's going to be a good matchup, and it's a very intriguing matchup for a number of reasons. But I love the dynamic between roommates going against each other in games that matter. I don't care if these games didn't matter. That would be fun, too. But these games are hugely important, and both of these teams need these wins. And I would love to see, you know, both of these guys are very fun-spirited, very good guys, you know, great to hang around with and talk to. I would love to be a fly on the wall in that house or apartment or wherever they're living, just to hear the chatter back and forth between them all week, because it would be priceless.
Yeah. Like I was telling you while we were doing the interview, it would be hysterical before the season finale to interview them both and have them be on separate sides of the household and just see what you can get out of them. So I think both those guys are extremely good guys. And not only that, but we've talked to both of them a couple times each, and they both, you know, they're as good of people as you hear on the air, which is something that you can't really say about a lot of people. I think that everyone on our show obviously say that about, but you never really know. Anyway, there are 3 weeks left in the season, Tom. 3 weeks. We got three games for every team, and there are a lot of interesting matchups because, as we talked about before, there are six teams who, you know, I think everyone mathematically right now is still in the game. I need to check the math on that, but I'm just going to say that for risk of being wrong. But Florida and Charlotte are done, let's be honest. Like, unless one of those two teams does something amazing and every other team on the planet starts losing games, like, I don't really think they're in the playoff situation. But what I want to ask is this. At this point in time in this season, there are a couple teams who have exceeded expectations, and we'll get to that in a second. But what I want to ask you, we talked about Jesse Schwartzman. We talked about Denver. And I don't know if there's been a team that has kind of underwhelmed as far as expectations are concerned as much as Denver. Is there another team, player, or situation that you've been as unimpressed with as what's happened with Denver, especially with the past few weeks being in the picture?
No, Denver's really struggling, and it's getting hard to watch. It's not hard to watch. It's just frustrating. But, you know, it's a situation where you want them – you're used to them being better. You know, I don't necessarily want them to be better, although, you know, I like for everyone to find success in this league. But we've seen every year that team's made the playoffs, every single year. Since some of the players on that team were in sixth grade, Denver's been in the playoffs. So that's a difficult thing to have that streak broken. And they've got a tough road to hoe just to correct that. And it's not looking like Denver and Chesapeake can make it. We're not going to see both teams at this point. Barring an epic collapse by Ohio, I don't know how Denver plays New York two of the last three games. And that is not a recipe for success for a playoff run, especially with a goaltender who's reeling. I guess as far as players, if, you know, players who I wish were doing better, Kevin Crowley. He hasn't played bad. Actually, he's been good. But he was an MVP a couple seasons ago. I wish we got to see him more. We haven't seen the difference maker that Kevin Crowley is yet this season. We haven't seen him have a huge blowout game where he just takes over and does whatever he wants. I miss that. I miss watching him dominate on the lacrosse field like he's clearly capable of doing. And the overlap of the seasons causes that. I wanted the Thompsons to light it up. And we got to see that finally this past weekend. We got to see what Lyle can do in the right situation. Going to go to Charlotte and Justin Ward. I don't know that he's even playing anymore. He's been a healthy scratch for most of the season, and I want to see him get that form back. I want to see him find a way to become the player he was last season for that team. I've been critical of him, incredibly critical of him. I've been tough on him. I've pushed him and played him off and hated that Joe Keegan loved him, but at the same time, there comes a point where you just want to see the guy find that groove again and start making plays. And that moment has passed with Justin Ward. I'm beyond wanting to see it. I need to see it now. Boston has done everything I didn't think they could do. They've been incredible all season long. They've reeled off a heck of a win streak here and turned into a team that before Sunday – or Saturday, I didn't think could win a championship. And now I think they're a serious contender. I think we're going to find out a little more about them when they play Ohio. but I think this is a team that you have to be concerned about if you go into the playoffs. I don't think anybody wants to play New York. Nobody wants to be what is ultimately probably going to be the 4 seed and have to go to New York to win a playoff game. But at the same time, I don't look at any of the top six and think that that would be an easy game. So we've seen some players step up. I wish Peter Baum would return to the form he had last year and have him be a superstar again. I mean, he was still an all-star and is still an incredibly good player, but I want to see the 50-goal season. And so there's a few guys that I don't know if I'm going to say they've underachieved, but we haven't gotten to see enough of them, and that's disappointing.
I mean, without repeating exactly what you said, because you named every player I was going to say, I think the Thompsons have been, as much flair as they bring to the game, I think that at some point in time, that's got to translate into wins. Same thing with Justin Ward. Actually, I take that back before I get into that little tangent. The Thompsons right now have been kind of underwhelming as far as what we thought they were going to be. I think also that goes with the youth of that team, and so we have to see where Florida's going moving forward. And now with expansion looming, it's going to be interesting to see exactly what Florida is going to be comprised of in this time next year. And that's the thing that I keep on looking at with that team, with as many players as they have who have a lot of indoor restrictions. I think that team was kind of built to do a little bit more this year. And I think that this past weekend, they play a Charlotte team that was vastly overmatched. And you saw how good Lyle can be, scoring 7 goals, but that's too little too late for that team. Same thing with Justin Ward. It's amazing how playmakers for teams that underperform seem to be at the bottom, because that kind of encompasses Justin Ward as well, because he's been a healthy scratch. That's one thing you didn't mention. He's a healthy scratch. And this is the guy who came in last year for Charlotte, who made such an impact that guys like me and Joe were salivating over what he was going to do this year with a full training camp. And all of a sudden, like, Joey Sankey comes in and just kind of assumes that role again. And it's kind of one of those things, like, that's kind of a revolving door with Charlotte. But I think in general, the entire Denver Outlaws team is just in a state of transition. When you lose a guy like Lee Zink, throughout the course of a season, you kind of feel it at about the 2/3 mark. You don't feel it necessarily at the first 3 or 4 games because you're so excited to just get back and make an impact and play the game you love and all that type of stuff. But once you get through a couple weeks and that leadership's gone, eventually that kind of weathers your team a little bit. And so I think that's being felt. And I think that Jesse Schwartzman's decline is a direct correlation between the fact that he doesn't have a guy like Lee Zink. He doesn't have an all-world defender in front of him anymore, so it kind of affects him in a negative way. And then you mentioned Chesapeake. I mean, Chesapeake is a team that really confounds me at this point, because this is a team that should be better, in my opinion, but they just can't seem to put it together. And so with that being said, I do want to kind of transition this into a little more positive light and say the things that we're really pumped about, because there are a lot of really positive stories, and that starts with the Boston Cannons, I feel like. That's a team that I'm not going to rub it in too much because I've lost the bet, I feel like, but that's a team that I bought a lot of stock in heading in the season. Do I think they're going to be second place in the league through 11 games? Definitely not. I don't even think – we interviewed Scott Ratliff in the beginning of the season. I don't think that even he would say they would have been 7-4. But that's a team that really looks like they are kind of firing on all cylinders, and it's been kind of amazing to see what they've been do moving forward. And then a lot of what the machine has been able to do throughout the course of the year without people like Baum moving forward has been kind of incredible. Tom, who are the people who really impressed you through 11 games as far as people who you didn't think were going to step up but who have made significant impacts on their teams?
Well, we talked to Davey Emily. He's been terrific. Scott Ratliff, I think, is in the MVP conversation. So sticking with Boston, you've got two there. Ratliff has been amazing. There's no other way to put it. Captain on that team, galvanizing leader. He's been terrific. New York, I'm gonna stay away from the obvious guys and take Tommy Palisic. You know, he's very quietly been a rock for them. He's been their third best player for most of the season and just gets it done when they ask him to. So what more can you ask for out of them? Tommy Schreiber in Ohio should be an MVP candidate. He has been absolutely terrific, do-it-all midfielder, might be, and I tweeted this out the other day, might be a top three midfielder in the league right now. And I think that's he's only going to continue to get better. Jordan Wolf in Rochester, I don't know that that's unexpected, but he's terrific. The guy that I would say is most improved in Rochester, and it's not that he wasn't good to begin with, but he's taken it to another level this year, is Jordan McIntosh. They've had the ball in his stick a lot more this season and asked him to do a lot more, and he has simply done it. He's fun to watch. He plays that two-man game and the pick game so well, and when he drops his stick into just his left hand, charges towards the goal with one shoulder pushing on his man, it's fun to watch. And I criticized him of it last year. He's brought his indoor moves to the outdoor game and found success, because last year, you know, I got to watch him a lot playing for the Swarm, and he never really used those box moves that he used constantly at the Xcel Energy Center, and now he's using those on the field. Chesapeake Joe Walters, I mean, wow. Joe, you still got it. You can do it all, and no one can stop you from doing it, and that's clear as a bell. And the other guy, oh, I hate myself for saying it, but Matt Danowski. I mean, yeah, wow. What a way to just all of a sudden become a team guy again and find the ability that allowed you to be an MVP in the past. He's been phenomenal. He's one of the reasons that team has maybe overachieved compared to where we thought they were going to be. Denver, that's tough because I expect them to be so good and they're not. John Grant Jr. is always great. But, you know, Michael Bachlett, because he came out of nowhere, was a free agent pickup from an open tryout and has 20 goals and 8 assists on the season. But, you know, maybe Drew Snyder, because he's another guy that does every single thing his team asks him to do. Florida, it's easy to pick Kieran McArdle because, A, he's one of my favorite players, and B, he's been ridiculously good. But how about Steven Brooks kind of quietly being great for them and just always being in the right place at the right time when they need him to offensively? Probably their unsung hero candidate, similar to Tommy Palisic, just a guy who gets it done when they ask him to. And Charlotte? You know, I go back to the New York game where Michael Earhart shuffled the ball up the field rather than picking it up with his stick. That was ridiculous lacrosse IQ, and he's shown that every single game. He has been the absolute best player on that team week in and week out, regardless of how Joey Sankey has done, regardless of how Brendan Fowler has done. That team, Michael Earhart has been their star.
I love Michael Earhart. I also love Brendan Fowler, but my love affair with Brendan Fowler has hit catastrophic levels ever since you made fun of me for whenever they picked him, and I just love it. I just love he's doing so well because I think he's exceptionally talented, and I think that him coming from a Duke program that I'm a huge fan of and coming to the pro team I'm a fan of, it's the exact opposite of what the Charlotte Hornets did picking Frank Kaminsky over Justice Winslow. But that's another story because that broke my heart. What I want to ask you about this is, Tom, there are a couple big games this weekend. We've highlighted the Boston-Ohio matchup, and we've done that ad nauseum. What is, to you, what is the biggest matchup that's going to come for the playoffs in the future? Because to me, right now, it seems like the Rochester-Chesapeake match, it kind of has a bullet on it, but my big thing is New York and Denver, because that is a matchup where Denver can possibly kind of rebound themselves. If they're ever going to turn it around, it has to be this weekend, and they're playing against a team that it seems like has a little bit of vulnerability attached to them because New York has not looked like their invincible self they looked through the first 6 weeks of the season. They seem to have a little bit of holes, and that might have been the fact that Rabel was gone. Tim wrote about this on LaxDirt.com about the fact that how important Rabel is to this team, and so maybe they have their invincibility back. However, it still seems like they do have a couple holes to fill as far as the defensive end is concerned, and there's no team to exploit that more than Denver. For your mindset, which matchup is bigger to you as far as how we're going to see the standing shakeup at the end of the year? Is it the New York Denver matchup or is it Rochester Chesapeake?
Yeah, you know, we have four great games this weekend. We're spoiled every week because every game is important. But New York is now in a place that they're in the playoffs. They're not really fighting for anything except for maybe they need one more win for home field advantage. So how hard are they going to push it? Are we going to see a different lineup? Are we going to see different players? Are we going to see them rest guys? Are we going to see them try to figure out who the playoff roster is going to be? That's an interesting sidebar playing against an Outlaws team that needs to win this game. They don't just need to win this game. They have to win this game. They absolutely have to win this game. And so you have one team that has everything on the line and another team that doesn't have nearly as much on the line but won't lay down. Joe Spoelstra is not going to lay down regardless. He might test his lineup a little bit to see who's playoff-ready team, but he's not going to lay down for them. Florida and Charlotte. It's kind of a situation where the loser gets the first number one overall pick. It's not necessarily true, but that's the most likely scenario here is that the loser of this game is going to end up the worst team in the league and end up with the first round pick. I think getting the number one overall pick is great. It would be good for both of these teams in an extremely perfect world, but nobody wants to be the worst team in the league. So this is going to be a battle. And Florida has been better the last few weeks, and Charlotte has had some fire in them. So Florida's got a little more talent on their side. Charlotte has that emotion. Charlotte, when they play emotional and play with that fire, they win games. And so it'll be interesting to see how that comes out. No one's going to throw in the towel and try to get the top pick. It's not worth it. So we're going to see a battle there. We already talked extensively about Boston, Ohio. That's a battle that has meaning for everybody involved. And Rochester and Chesapeake is another big game because Rochester played great last calling them out of the playoffs, saying that they weren't going to be any good. But they did really well, and they showed that they can win and they can score. I mean, they really can score on anybody. They're going to struggle without Manley, but at the same time, when Galloway heats up, he's still one of the best goalies in the world, if not the best, and they can still make plays. And Chesapeake has that veteran roster that just knows how to get it done in crunch time. Let's not forget, Chesapeake was very close to beating New York this past week. Another team that had a late second half collapse, and I don't think Cottle's going to let that happen again. So we have four great matchups this weekend that all have big-time meaning, and no one is gonna lay down and get walked on. They're going to fight till the end because these games still matter in some way, shape, or form.
We'll tell you what, Tom, to close out the show for the next couple weeks, we're going to do the same thing we did over the course of the NLL playoffs a couple years ago. I'm just going to ask you who's going to make it, who's not going to make it. Because right now, for my money, looking at the schedules, New York's already made it, so they're good. Boston, they look like they don't lose back-to-back games, so we're going to go ahead and throw them in as far as I'm concerned. I'm a big Ohio fan, so I'm going to throw them in as well because I think them and Boston are going to split their games. I haven't done the math, but I think that's going to be able to work to where they both get in. And then I'm going to say Chesapeake gets in just because their schedule. It seems a little easier. I think Rochester's going to be outside looking in, and I kind of want to get your opinion on, as of right now, July 6th, who do you think is going to be in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, I always count Rochester in the same way you always count them out. So I think they're going to hang on and beat Chesapeake. I like that they play Florida and Charlotte two of their last three games. So I think the schedule works out to their favor, being that, you know, they've shown – I mean, right now, if you look at the standings, Rochester's last few games are against the three bottom teams, with Chesapeake being the other one. So they need to win this week to show that they're in. But after that, they have probably the easiest road into the playoffs for the last 2 weeks. I think we already have eliminated Denver because – they're not going to beat New York 2 out of 2, and they're going to need to. So New York, Boston, who hasn't locked up, but they're going to make it. Ohio, I agree with you. Those two are going to split those two games and both find a way to get in. It's going to be who wins their other game that determines who ends up with home field advantage. And you know, Rochester's my 4 seed, and they're going to have a tough road to travel into New York for that first game.
Yeah, worst case scenario, this is going to be extremely interesting because this has been one of the very few years where a team that we all thought was going to be in the playoffs in Denver is out. So now one team we all thought was going to be out in Boston is going to be in. So it makes things a little bit more interesting. And by we all, I mean you, because I thought Boston was going to be at least decent. So that's good, if you want to call me out about my Rochester situation. But that's neither here nor there. We will be back next week. We're going to have to cut this a little short this week, but we'll be back next week, 8 p.m. on Mondays, new time, new place, everything like that. We want to thank Davey Emela for coming on. He is awesome. If you guys get a chance, follow him. It's DEmela2 on Twitter. Tom, once again, is Bobby Lax. And we hope you guys tune in next week. Tune in to Laxert for all of the statistical analysis that Tom mentioned from Joe Keegs. He is really, really doing amazing things. And so we want to make sure to highlight him. But either way, everyone, hopefully you guys have a great week. Enjoy all of the cross action this next weekend. And we will talk to you next week, once again, 8 p.m. on the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. For Tom Bobie, I'm James Boger. You guys have a great week, and we appreciate you tuning in.